You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio, broadcast from Bank of America. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-host, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Ethan Milrod, GoToTech. And Christine, can you give a rundown on who we've got on the air today?
Sure, Herb. We have a great show today. We have Dale Larimer, attorney at law, Larimer Farnish, LLP. We have Jim Forstner, attorney at law, James E. Forstner, LLC. Jeffrey Reif, attorney at law, Reif and Biley. And Marina Katz, founding partner, Philly Lawyers, Katz, Jamison, and Associates.
Excellent. Let's get to know our first guest, Dale Larimer, attorney at law, Larimer Farnish, LLP. Dale, what is Larimer Farnish, LLP? What are you guys doing?
We are a what I like to call a people firm. It's a small personal injury firm that represents people in any myriad way that they can get injured.
Where are you from originally?
From Seaford, Delaware, a small town in lower Delaware.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have an older brother, 2 years older, and a younger sister, about 8 years younger.
Uh-huh. And how'd that affect you growing up the middle of three?
Well, because my brother was much closer in age, he had much more of an impact.
What do you mean? Tell us about that.
I found myself trying to follow in his footsteps. He was a leader in school, and I tried to emulate him.
Give us an example of how you emulated him.
Well, he ran for president of the student council. I ran for president of the senior class. I wanted to be a leader in the class.
Did you end up with that role?
I did, yes.
Why'd you end up with that role? Why'd they make you the president of your senior high school class?
Well, I think that the students saw me as a leader in a lot of the clubs and organizations I was part of, and they trusted me to represent them.
I understand you grew up in a small community. It was about 5,000 people. And grandpa and dad had owned a business. What kind of business was that?
It was Larimer Dairy. We had a milk processing plant in the town.
So everybody in town knew that you got your last name was on the dairy products.
Absolutely.
How'd that make you feel?
Well, it gave a sense of responsibility in me that I had to represent my family in whatever I did. A small town, everybody knows everything.
So, and what was your mom? What did your mom do for a living?
She was an English teacher in high school for a while and then stopped to raise the family and then became a librarian when I was in high school. She was a school librarian.
So you got a lot of pride in you, the fact that the family business was well known in the community. Actually, you told us a story when you ran for president of the senior high school class. You put stickers on all the milk cartons, you know. So, you know, you were very proud of the family name. What did that pride in that small community do to you? How's that affecting you nowadays?
Well, it instilled in me a sense of responsibility that I had to represent my clients now with that type of ethics and responsibility and doing what needed to be done to make them a success in what I was representing.
Who's got the next question here?
One of the most influential factors I've learned about the work you do is integrity. Do you think that, again, the small town knowing everyone in town and facing them in the supermarket and so forth help develop that sense of integrity?
Absolutely. My father was the mayor of our community for a while, and so I think that I recognize that what I did was a reflection on my family as well. Yes.
Christine?
You mentioned the word leadership, and tell us a little bit more about how your dad and your grandfather, when they led the business, how they instilled leadership in you as a young person.
Well, they taught me the importance of being responsible for the employees of the dairy and the community and taking care of people. My father, when the dairy finally closed, indicated that if he had gotten the money from all the people that owed them for delivering milk, he wouldn't have had to go out of business. But he had to take care of the people in the community.
Ethan?
Yeah, how does that correlate to what you're doing today at your firm?
Well, I feel the same way about the employees in my firm and also my clients, that they look to me to take care of them with the problems that they have, and I do that, and that's why they refer other people to me. I have my clients come from referrals from satisfied former clients. I don't need to advertise.
Peter?
Dale, in the green room, where you were telling us that you had a partner originally and something tragic happened. Tell us how that shaped your role in the firm.
Sure. For the first 20 years, I was a trial attorney and spent my time in courtrooms and really enjoyed it. In 1994, the founding partner of the firm died, and all of a sudden, it was now my responsibility to make payroll every week and to take care of the firm. And I wasn't prepared for it, and I struggled for a while, but I had to do that to make sure that the firm
continued. What do you mean you had to do it? I mean, it sounds to me that you know, you could have gone to work for another firm. What do you mean you had to do it? Where did that come from?
I had 10 employees in the firm at that point that depended upon me for a paycheck every week.
So it never even occurred to you, even though you had never run a business or run a practice, it never even occurred to you to close the doors and go to work somewhere else.
Absolutely not, no.
And where did that come? You think that had anything to do with the pride and the fact that you needed to keep the name alive?
Keeping the name of the firm alive? Maybe, but I think it was more just the way I was brought up, that you have responsibility to others.
Huh. Where'd you get that from? What are you talking about? Give me an example of that.
Well, my grandfather, who worked his entire life trying to make a living and started the family, and he wasn't a mayor of the community, but he was well-respected in town, and everybody looked at him and said, this is somebody we can trust. And I think that was instilled in me.
How do you know that?
Because I talked to a lot of people as he got older, and when at his funeral, I couldn't believe the outpouring of support from people who talked about him.
What do you mean?
Well, he was the kind of person that everybody could come to and trust to take care of them.
You remember his funeral?
I do.
And
sure.
You remember speaking to people at the funeral?
I do, absolutely.
What did you find out about your grandfather at his funeral?
I found out that he was a respected, although he wasn't a leader like my father was, he was a respected member of the community.
And how do you think that affected you?
It gave me a sense of pride in the family name and a sense of responsibility and trust.
Christine?
Take care of people.
Dale, did you see that when the dairy business went out of business? Did you watch that unfold before your eyes and have the business close?
I was graduating from high school, entering college, but we could all tell that the business was not doing well, that we could not compete with large dairies that were producing a lot more milk. So,
how did that affect you to see that?
Well, what affected me more than anything was to find out that when they closed, my father then became an educator. He went to and taught at a community college, and he said, I would always wanted to do this. I love doing this. Why didn't you do it before, Dad? Because I had a family to support. I had a responsibility for my family.
Ethan? So, Dale, did your parents have an opportunity to see the success that you've had in your life?
My father certainly did. My mother unfortunately died at 55 of a brain tumor.
Oh,
so
I'm sorry to hear
she
that.
Did not get to see everything. But
what
my father
did. What
did
your father tell you when he got to see that success?
Well, he appreciated the fact that I had gone into a business that my mother for years said, I think you'd make a great lawyer. And I never really thought about it. I went to college thinking I was going to be in business of some sort. But she said, you've got a relationship with people. I think you'd be a good attorney. And ultimately I did that. And that
How'd
made
that
him
make
very
you
proud.
Feel?
It made me very proud that I had ultimately fulfilled what her dream was, even though I didn't really know it early on.
Sure.
It sounds like your parents allowed you to follow your true passion, not necessarily go into the business, that you had an opportunity that your father didn't have till later in life. Was he pleased about that?
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely.
And, yeah. What did that mean to you?
Well, it means a lot, and I do a lot of teaching now, a lot of lecturing to other attorneys on the law, and I feel proud that we're carrying on the teaching that both my mother and father ultimately did, and it makes me very proud of that. Yes.
Dale, so today you have how many members in your firm, or how many people?
Well, there's just two of us now, two partners, and then we have a staff of four other people in the firm that work for us.
So you're a total of six?
Yes.
And it's maybe a little bit like a small town in your
Absolutely,
office.
Yes.
Okay,
very
so
close.
You feel right at home.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow, that's interesting you picked up on that. What else do you think, Ethan?
Dale, you mentioned earlier about 36 years ago you started a side hobby. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I do magic on the side as my hobby, and I do performances for kids' birthday parties. I always do our office Christmas party. I think all trial lawyers like to be a little bit of an actor or something. I'm not on the stage, but I do performance for people, and it brings me a lot of pleasure to do that.
What parallels do you see in doing magic and practicing law?
Well, some of my victories have been magic in front of juries, frankly. You know, you never know what's going to happen in front of a jury, and you have to work a little magic sometimes to get that victory.
I wish the listeners could see how much you lit up, both when you talked about how you could perform and also do that in the courtroom. What is it about that connection with the children or the people that lights you up so much?
It's the relationship to people as a whole. That's what I think a good attorney has to be, is you have to see your client not as a client but as a person and recognize them. What has happened to your life as a result of this injury? And sometimes we're a little bit of a voyeur because we peek into their lives to see how this serious injury has affected their life. And it makes me feel good that I can do that and represent their interest to the jury and explain that to them.
In the green room, you mentioned earlier the importance of always doing the right thing. Do you feel as though you've done the right thing?
I do, yes. We're very proud of the ethics of our firm.
Mm-hmm. And I would suspect that you'd like to share that your staff also emulates those thoughts. Do you want to give a shout out to your staff?
Absolutely. I've got a wonderful staff. We have, my partner has been with me for 35 years, and we have a secretary slash paralegal slash office manager who's been with me for 30 years. So a lot of long-term
staying
employees.
Power.
Mm-hmm. And loyalty.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Dale, what's the website address of this organization?
It is LarimoreFarnish.com.
Let me have that one more time.
LarimoreFarnish.com.
Interesting. We've been speaking with Dale Larimore, who's an attorney at law with Larimore Farnish, LLP. And I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, and Ethan Milrod, GoTo Tech, for giving me a hand. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, executiveleadersradio.com. One last question, Dale. What's the best part of your job?
Best part of my job is coming to work every day and doing things for people, for clients that make their lives better.
Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen, with my co-hosts, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, and Ethan Milrod, GoToTech. I'd like to introduce James Forstner, attorney at law, James E. Forstner, attorney at law, LLC. James, what is James E. Forstner, attorney at law, LLC? What are you guys doing?
Well, my practice is devoted primarily to medical negligence and serious personal injury, where my clients have been, you know, extraordinarily injured by the wrongdoings of another person.
Where are you from originally?
Originally, I'm from Cleveland, Ohio.
How many brothers and sisters?
Well, I'm one of five, and I'm the oldest of five. I've got three brothers and a sister.
You're the oldest of five. And how young were you when you got a sense that you were going to end up in the practice of law?
You know, that's interesting. I've thought about it, and I think it's my earliest memory. I think, grade school, I always wanted to be a lawyer.
Why? What are you talking about? Give me a sense of what that, how you remember that, or how, what that felt like, or what.
Well, you know, my parents, my mother in particular, said, you know, you argue about everything. And why is it everything you got to argue about? And my grandfather even said to me one time, you know, even a fish would stay out of trouble if he kept his mouth shut.
Uh-huh.
And for me, it was just the idea of trying to, advance my position and make my argument about things. And I thought, you know, ultimately, that's what lawyers do. They advance their positions for other people.
On the other hand, you also mentioned you spent a lot of time hanging out with your grandfather. What kind of stuff did you do with your grandfather?
My grandfather was a real influence in my life. It was my mother's father. And, you know, he was a quintessential grandfather. We went fishing together. We went hunting together. You know, he spent a lot of time talking to me about doing the right things.
Uh-huh. And you mentioned that you thought he was a pretty compassionate kind of guy, huh?
I thought so, yeah. He loved everyone. Everyone loved him. He was a wonderful man.
Uh-huh. Didn't you mention you have that characteristic as well? On one hand, you could be aggressive. On the other hand, the compassion is really, you know, part a big chunk of who you are.
Well, you know, I think so. And the reason, I mean, the whole part of my business, is the people that I see and meet, I mean, they're devastatingly injured. I mean, they're either dead, dying, or disabled. And when you look at people like that, you cannot help but think that everything about them has changed in an instant. No matter what they do, they will never be the same again. And while I can never give them back their health, I can at least help them or their family move forward.
Mm-hmm. Well, what kind of sports did you play as a kid?
I was a wrestler, and I was on the track team, and I played some baseball.
What was the common thread on how you affected those teams?
I was competitive. I tried to do the best I could do for my team.
Well, how's that? What's that? What's the parallel between how you affected those teams and what you try to do with your clients nowadays?
Well, this is a competitive business, and everybody that you're dealing with in the law is trying to do the exact opposite of what you're trying to do. So, if one files a lawsuit, there's somebody on the other side is trying to undo everything you do.
Mm-hmm.
So, the only way that you're going to be successful in that is if you're aggressive and move forward with advancing someone's interests.
Cool, Peter.
Jim, I want to go back a little bit to your dad. You mentioned that your dad was a general surgeon,
yes,
and you had the opportunity at one point in your life to watch him operate, and that changed your perspective on things. Tell us about that.
Well, my dad was a general surgeon, and he was kind of a quiet guy, and was very introspective. And I never really realized the things that he would do for his patients growing up. I mean,
an example.
Well, I remember seeing him. I was probably in my mid-20s, and I was actually doing some training, and I had the opportunity to watch him operate. and he was performing a mastectomy, a removal of a woman's breast for cancer. And I remember him, you know, just touching her and smoothing her hair and just assuring her that all would be well. And it was just something that I had not seen before, really experienced in my life.
How old were you when you saw that?
I was probably about 26.
And how'd that affect you?
Well, it made me understand really what, not only what the practice of medicine really is there's many, many fine physicians and nursing staff, but also how compassionate they actually have to be in their own business. But then on the other hand, it also made me realize the compassion my father had, inherent passion in his, and compassion in his life.
Mm-hmm. Jim, what strikes me is that you pay close attention to things, even that you notice that your father was stroking the hair of the patient. And we talked a little in the green room about when someone's on the stand and how you get them to open up, and you seem to be very modest about some of the intuitiveness. But even going back further, you talked about, we're reading a magazine about a business, and you started a business at a very early age. Again, paying attention. Tell us a little more about that.
Well, you know, I think unfortunately, lawyers and people in general, they don't always listen to what other people have to say. And listening in our business is probably more important than anything else, because everybody has a story, and the story that you're going to hear from your client is the most important one you're going to get. And the story that we all hear from each other is the most important one they're going to get. Too many times we think about the next thing that we want to say, and it's really not the thing to do. It's just to listen to what somebody else has to say.
Where did that start, and how young were you when that showed up? Because it seems to me that's been going on for a long time.
I was a Boy Scout, and I remember reading the magazine called Boys Life Magazine about some of the things that you could do if you were to, you know, start a business. And one of the things that I read about was selling Christmas cards door to door. And I was about 7 or 8 years old when I started to do that. And that was a way for me to kind of connect with other people, selling those cards in my neighborhood.
So it's paying attention and then putting that into action. And you were an entrepreneur from a pretty young age then. So you were how old selling those cards?
I was 7 or 8.
And then what did you do next?
Well, I mean, I grew up in Cleveland, Ohio, on the western edge of Cleveland. At that time, it was kind of a farming community. And, you know, even though I lived in a neighborhood, I mean, right nearby was, it was farm fields and woods. And I ran a trap line and bought and sold raw furs all the way through college. In fact, I actually paid for most of my college education doing precisely that, you know, running a trap line and buying and selling raw furs.
Did you have to make your own way? Your father was a doctor. Maybe I have a misperception.
No, I didn't have to make my own way. But, I mean, everybody should have some sort of sense of self, and they should try to support themselves in whatever way is necessary. Mm-hmm. And so there's going to be a point in my life where, you know, I wasn't going to have my father. And besides, I had four other brothers and sisters, too. So, you know, it was even though my parents
cool.
were
how does that how does that relate to what you do for your clients now, helping them be sufficient?
Well, in many ways, helping them be sufficient is getting them in the to get the right care that they need at the time.
Yep.
But also, it's to assist them mm-hmm. with the potential monetary aspect of trying to recover.
Yep. Peter.
So being a corporate lawyer, I mean, a lot of times you would go to work and work your 8 hours and go home. How's that work out for you? You're a 9-to-5 kind of guy?
No, this is a service business. We're not 9-to-5. And I tell people all the time, I give people my cell number. I said, listen, I don't care what time it is. If you've got an issue, call me. It's important. It's important for us to be connected. And that's one of the reasons my firm is small, so I can have a small number of clients, and so I can have that close personal interaction.
So you have to be active and aggressive. It's like working the trap line, right? I mean, if you're not out there, you're not going to catch anything.
That's right. That's exactly correct.
Well, what's the website address of this law firm, James E. Forstner, Attorney at Law, LLC?
TheFillyAttorney.com.
Let me have that another time.
TheFillyAttorney.com.
TheFillyAttorney.com. We've been speaking with James Forstner, Attorney at Law, James E. Forstner, Attorney at Law, LLC, here on Executive Leaders Radio. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, Ethan Milrod, GoTo Tech. This is Herb Cohen. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com, to learn more about our executive leaders, executiveleadersradio.com. We'll be back in a moment right after this business spotlight. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. This is your host, Herb Cohen. We'd like to introduce Jeffrey Reif, attorney at law, Reif & Biley. Jeffrey, what is Reif & Biley? What are you guys doing?
Reif & Biley deals with catastrophic injuries and deaths from amusement park accidents, trucking accidents, or product liability, particularly auto product liability. Mm-hmm. And these are folks that have had their hopes and dreams shattered in the blink of an eye due to some catastrophic event.
Where were you originally from?
I'm originally from 2nd and Cheltenham, a row house in Philadelphia. Grew up on the streets of Philadelphia.
How many brothers and sisters?
I have a younger brother and a younger sister.
So you're the oldest of three. And what did mom and dad do for a living?
My father was a diamond setter, a jeweler by trade. Mm-hmm. My mother was a working housewife.
How young were you when you were told what you're going to be when you grew up?
From the time I can remember, I was told I was going to have to work. And my father and grandfather took me into work to learn the diamond setting and jewelry trade. And I was probably 6 or 7 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I became a diamond setter.
And then what happened?
And then I became I started a leather business at age 13 that was actually radio by Dun & Bradstreet. It provided me with some nice income. And
at the age of 13, you did that.
At the age of 13, mm-hmm. Yes. And I started to manufacture with friends of mine and eventually employees mm-hmm. leather bags, belts, mm-hmm. bracelets, earrings, and we would go to the trade shows and sell them.
I understand at the age of 7, something happened where you were told about some sort of an accident. Tell us a little bit about that and what that did to you.
Well, I lived in a very close-knit area, Roham, where people would sit on their porches at night and stoops and watch talk about the ball game. And there was a family we were very close to that lived about 3 doors away. And I remember my parents coming in and told me they were involved in a terrible car accident, that the car rolled over. And I asked, how did that happen? And my mother just said they lost control. And I always wondered what caused the vehicle to lose control, and I never got an answer. And to this day, when I drive a car and I meet with clients, I wonder what causes these vehicles to go out of control and basically... So change the lives of people where their life becomes a living hell. And that has stayed with me to this day. And it was a topic of conversation in our neighborhood.
So I understand that you developed a keen interest in what was really going on. But there's a piece of you which is fascinating, which has to do with your feelings. What's that about?
Well, I was very emotional about that because it involved a dear friend. And a couple of years later, my law partner, who was one of my closest friends, was involved in a catastrophic accident where he was driving his car and went under the underride bar of the truck. And these are life-shattering incidents for the people, their families. The people's hopes and dreams are shattered in the blink of an eye. And I became very empathetic to how are they going to carry on. Who's going to support the families? Who's going to support the children? And what's mom going to do without dad there? And this is something that keeps me up today, even on the cases I currently work on.
What does?
I always wonder with each case, am I going to be good enough? And I'm going to do my best to make sure that these people are made whole. And unfortunately, they can't be made whole physically or emotionally. And what we try to do is take what the family existed prior to the case, prior to this incident, and examine it under a fine-tooth comb.
Did you mention to me that you sometimes get emotionally involved?
Yeah, I get very emotionally involved.
What do you mean?
I'm embarrassed to tell you that. When you live with somebody's tragedy and you get to know a family, it becomes quite emotional. They become part of your family. And I tell clients, call me 24/7, no matter, there's no dumb conversation, no dumb questions. We are basically their lifeline after a horrible accident. And they really don't have anybody to turn to.
Who was the emotional one in your family, your mom or your dad?
I think we're all emotional. And I'm married to an emotional woman, and we have a lot of empathy, and we're very sensitive to people.
Next question, who's got it?
When you were younger, you took up acting, didn't you?
I did. You know, so when I went to high school and junior high, I auditioned and got roles in all the high school plays and junior high plays, and it followed me into college. And in college, I had a radio show. I interviewed some celebrities, and through interviewing the celebrities, I was able to gain a role in such movies as The Exorcist and some other movies. And I became passionate about it. At one point, I wanted to be in the entertainment business, whether it be in movies or on the stage. I loved it.
How did that prepare you for being an attorney?
Trials theater. What we do is really presenting a case. Sometimes I look at myself as the executive producer of a production. And we go out, and just like we would hire the finest talent for a stage production or movie, I hire the finest experts. We spare no expense. We don't want a C or B grade movie. We want a bestseller, an A grade movie. And I've recognized that, as lawyers, we're really glorified salespeople selling an intangible product called pain and suffering.
Christine?
Jeffrey, you didn't have to do this. You were pretty much self-made by the time you went to college. Take us back. You talked a little bit in the green room about all your life. Charitable work was instilled in you. And I feel that when you talk about how much you care about your clients. You want to make sure they get it, what they need.
Well, I grew up in scouting, Boy Scouts, Cub Scouts, and charity was always very important in my family. I was active in community events. I remember in the Scouts, I was working with brain-damaged children, patterning them, children with cerebral palsy, and I realized at that point that the families had, they had a long road ahead of them, not the normal journey. And I became very empathetic to it, and I've really been involved in charity with leadership roles ever since, nationally and internationally. And even to this day, I'm currently working on a case with a family that has three brain damaged children, and I can recognize what they're going through because it goes back to my days in the Cub Scouts where I was patterning children who had the same issues.
Wow. So,
Peter?
And so, Jeff, preparing cases is not always exciting or glamorous or entertaining, and there's a lot of work involved. So how do you stay motivated? What keeps you, how do you stay passionate? Because there's a lot of hard work.
Well, I'm very passionate about what I do. I love going to work every day. I love meeting people. I like helping people. And there's something that kicks in when there's a god-awful tragedy that occurs. And I'll tell you one case we're working on now is a young girl fell out of a Ferris wheel and was killed. And we received that call, and I met the family, 26 people, 27 people, cousins sitting around firing questions. What would you do? How would you handle this? You feel the pain. You feel the emotion, and something kicks in that says, I want to do my best to help these people, and I want to make sure that they have a fair shake. They say the trial lawyers are greedy, and I have to tell you, I'm greedy for justice. And I think that it's important when you're fighting a big corporation where they emphasize profitability over safety, that you have to go at them with as many loaded guns as you have. And I enjoy the fight. I've always enjoyed it.
Jeffrey, what qualities do you look for in the people that you bring in to work for your firm? Is empathy one of them?
Empathy. I tell people sometimes when they meet my paralegal, this is going to be your trial mommy. And this is going to be the person that everybody in my office must return a phone call as soon as possible. And if they don't return a phone call to a client within 12 hours, which we've never had, they're not there. Because once again, we're the lifeline to that client. I look for people that are compassionate. Truthfully, when we do a lot of a day in the life videos, and I'll show them to people when I'm hiring them to demonstrate the type of work we do. And I can tell from their emotion if they tear up or if they cry or if there's a sense of emotion evoked that, yes, I want this person on my team.
So you want teammates to care.
Yeah.
Not just a business.
It's never been a business to me.
Jeffrey, there's something called secondary trauma. The first one is the incident and the accidents and what people go through, and the second is how they're treated afterwards. And it sounds like to me that you're making sure that they don't experience that trauma when they're going through the legal system, which can be very, very difficult.
One of the things I'm very conscious of, my son is a psychiatrist, my wife's a psychologist. We do a lot with PTSD victims. There's nothing worse than PTSD to somebody, then PTSD that occurs when somebody or a family member has been in a catastrophic accident. So we're very sensitive to it. We work with great professionals, not only within our own firm, but outside the firm. It's important when somebody comes in to help them through the grieving process, to be with them, to be their rabbi or priest, as well as their attorney and counselor.
This is love for you, isn't it?
True love, very passionate.
That's interesting. So you really enjoy what you do for a living.
I do. You know, if I go on vacation, and I'll tell you, sometimes you have to get away from it because it totally takes over your life. When I'm on vacation for a couple of days, I can't wait to get back. And I still call my clients. I Skype them or I call them on the phone. We're fond of telling our clients that you will become our family. And you know, if you read some of the reviews we've had online under Avvo, you'll read that people have written that about us.
What's the website address for this firm, Reef and Biley?
It's reefandbiley.com.
How do you spell that?
R-E-I-F-F as in Frank,
mm-hmm.
and the word and spelled out A-N-D,
mm-hmm.
Biley, B-I-L-Y.com.
We've been speaking with Jeffrey Reef, attorney at law, Reef and Biley, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Don't forget to visit our website, executiveleadersradio.com. Learn more about our executive leaders. We'll be back in a moment right after this break. We're back. You're listening to Executive Leaders Radio. I'd like to introduce Marina Katz, founding partner, Philly Lawyers, Katz, Jamison & Associates. Marina, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from Ukraine. I immigrated to the United States in 1979.
And I understand that you were in Italy for a little bit prior to coming to the United States. What were you doing in Italy?
I was in refugee camps. I have a very interesting story because
you were in refugee camps in Italy?
Yes.
And then you came to the United States. Was this with your parents?
I came with my parents.
How many brothers and sisters do you have?
I am the only child.
So when you came to the United States, did your parents speak English and did you speak English?
No, we didn't speak any English
whatsoever. What role did you end up playing with the family when you came to the United States in terms of English speaking and stuff like that?
From being a very protected child, from very loving parents, I became a parent to my parents.
What do you mean? What are you talking about?
I have to speak English. I had to be the first one to get a job and go to school and work two jobs through college and two jobs through law school.
So you came to the United States. You didn't speak English. Your parents didn't speak English. You really fell. You rose to the occasion. Being learning English, getting work. Why did you have to get work? Why didn't your parents get work?
Unfortunately, my parents did not speak English, and the jobs were hard to come by. Many mm-hmm. people are aware how hard it is to find a job when you don't speak the language.
What did Mom and Dad do in Russia and Ukraine prior to coming here? And then what kind of jobs did they end up getting?
My mother was an economist. And my father was a director of the food chain
distribution. And what did they end up doing? It sounded like they had pretty professional careers in Russia. What did they end up doing when they came to the United States?
They have, and that's why I always try to instill how important the education is in my children, unfortunately.
So when they came to the United States, what did your mom was an economist, your dad was a director. What did they end up doing?
She ended up going to the factory and working as a seamstress.
And what did your dad end up doing?
And my dad ended up being a laborer mm-hmm. because he didn't speak any English, and unfortunately,
and where was this? Which part of this was in Philadelphia?
It was Philadelphia, Northeast Philadelphia.
And was this an affluent part of Philadelphia?
It's in Northeast Philadelphia. It's working class area.
So you ended up putting yourself through college also, didn't you?
Yes.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to Temple undergrad. Uh-huh. I went to Temple Law School.
Uh-huh.
And I have my LLM in trial advocacy, which mm-hmm. is sort of like PhD in law.
Only
1% of the lawyers have that.
Back in the green room, Marina, we were talking about what it was like, the contrast between leaving the former Soviet Union and coming to the United States, and you said it was stark. Can you tell us a little more about that, what it was like coming here?
I think it was most wonderful experience. I think immigrants appreciate this country enormously because what this country gives you is opportunities. You're no longer afraid. You have a freedom of speech. You have a freedom of religion. And obviously growing up in Soviet Union, I was deprived of all those things.
And you mentioned that your friends were your really closest confidants, and you felt that you didn't have that same fear when you came here about who you spoke to and so forth.
Well, of course, when you live in the Soviet Union, your government tries to control everything. And that's why it's so important to have a very close friend and have a support system. And one thing I liked about Soviet schools is different than here because you go with the same group of students, you start your first grade and you go through your 10th grade. and you live in the same neighborhood. So you're really responsible, and you cannot be wishy-washy about your friendship. You really have to devote yourself to your friends.
Ethan? Marina, you said earlier that freedom has a smell and taste. What did you mean by that?
It absolutely does. And it's hard for a lot of people to understand how important the democracy in the world is and how important it is to maintain that freedom of religion, freedom of press, and ability not to be afraid.
Marina, so I'm picturing you coming to the States. It's day one. You smell the freedom. You can taste it. But how does that relate to what you do for your clients? How does freedom relate to your work?
First thing, I think when the client has a good lawyer, the client develops a confidence in themselves and confidence in their case. I think that's very important. Long time, one of my clients said, the client does not care how much lawyer knows. The client wants to know how much lawyer cares. And if you install that in your client, a confidence, a reassurance that everything's going to be A-OK, or if it's not going to be A-OK, you got to tell them right up front, hey, there might be a problem down the road. But as long as the client can take sort of the headache from their shoulders and put it on yours, and you're willing to do this for your client is a lot stronger as a result of it.
It sounds like you took the role of parent, you said, to your parents. Is that part of what you're doing then for your clients?
Oh, my office, not only to my clients, my office usually gives me a party for Mother's Day. So it's
why?
So
tell us more.
They call me mother of the office and the mother to the client. Yeah, I always talk to my clients like what the mother would talk to their children, because they come in with a problem. And that's what I do all day. I solve problems for them.
If we asked your employees at your firm about you, what would they say about you?
She's the greatest. No, it's absolutely the truth. I have a greatest staff. And I sort of, to give you an analogy, I always said to, you know, you build a better baseball team, you win more games. And long in college, I learned this from, actually, it was a president of American Express who said, the salary is not an expense, it's an investment. And I believe that if you pay your people more than they can get going across the street, they'll be more loyal to you. And we have this incredible loyalty, and people stay with us for a very long time.
Marina, you were talking about your dad never wanted you to have to work. You came from means.
Yes.
And
we came from good living in the former Soviet Union.
And so he never thought you would have to work. And what did it do to him to have to see you support the family? And what were you determined to overcome on his behalf?
It's upset him enormously. And I wanted for him to be obviously proud. And I wanted for him to never regret the decision of leaving the Soviet Union and the comfort of the sort of government protecting you.
Marina, what is the website address?
It's phillylawyers.com.
We've been speaking with Marina Katz, founding partner of Philly Lawyers, Katz, Jamison & Associates, here on Executive Leaders Radio. Christine, can you give us a rundown on who we've had the opportunity of speaking with?
Sure. We had Dale Larimore, attorney at law, Larimore Farnish, LLP. James Fossner, attorney at law, James E. Fossner, LLC. Jeffrey Reif, attorney at law, Reif and Biley. And Marina Katz, founding partner, Philly Lawyers, Katz and Jamison Associates.
Excellent. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Christine Miles, CI Squared, Peter Snelling, Merrill Lynch, and Ethan Milrod, GoToTech, for giving me a hand structuring the questions. Hopefully for providing our listening audience an educational and entertaining show. I'd like to thank our listening audience for listening. Otherwise, we wouldn't have a radio show. Don't forget to visit our website. It's executiveleadersradio.com to learn more about our executive leaders. It's executiveleadersradio.com. To learn more about our executive leaders, thank you for joining us today. Have a nice day. Bye-bye.